This past week, over some Taco Tuesday platters off of 4th Street, a friend and I shared the ups and downs that our lives have taken. There were some high points, but it was in the sharing of the low points. That's where the teary eyes, the presence was known. You see, my friend's parents are elderly, and in their late 80s and early 90s, and like many, they are hoping to stay in their home and independent as long as they possibly can. And like many adult children, my friend and her siblings are doing their level best to assist their parents in doing just that, without enabling, while respecting their wishes and keeping them safe, and trying to get decent sleep without worrying the night away. Sleep is not easy because my friend's mother suffers severely from dementia, requiring a caregiver who comes to care for her through much of the day. My friend's father, though, is more independent, which is wonderful and in some ways causes its own problems. For instance, he probably shouldn't be driving, let alone on the freeways of Southern California. But he does, rebelling often for doctor's visits, if for no other reason than because he simply feels so isolated. And is it any wonder? Well, recently it was my friend's father who fell ill. He wasn't eating for a day or two, then longer, and soon he was hospitalized. So immediately, and then every other weekend or so after her father came home from the hospital, my friend pressed pause on her life here in Berkeley and flew down to Southern California to cook and clean, provide respite for a sibling, anything that she could do to help. And what she found interesting was that for the first few visits, she was in constant motion, fixing this, cleaning that, shopping for food, clearing out that closet, anything to feel like she was doing something. Are you sure there isn't anything else I can do, Dad? As you might expect, more things did come up. I mean, there always is a garage or an attic that hasn't been touched for decades. But it wasn't until my friend had visited several times that she realized what was really going on. The work that she was doing was fine. There was nothing wrong with it, but it wasn't what she was really there to do. In fact, she wasn't there to do at all. She was really there to be. She was there to be present with her parents, even if she couldn't change a thing. When she came to that realization, her visits changed. Yes, she still did some grocery shopping and cooking, but what she really did, what she really was present with her parents. Nothing more and nothing less. Simply present. It didn't erase her mother's dementia. It didn't prevent her father from slowly slipping. No amount of tidying or fixing could alter that. But there were stories shared of long ago. There was some healing, and in the midst of isolation, there was communion. Not because of grand heroic gestures, but through simple, faithful acts of presence. For the past few weeks, I've been part of a leadership team preparing for a group of us from All Souls to join four other parishes to head back to the Standing Rock Reservation in South Dakota to spend some time with Lakota Episcopalians. In the midst of the details about sheetrock and 2x6 frames for outhouses, I have been recalling our trip from last year. And there's one part of the trip that has resurfaced several more times now, and so I think I need to pay attention. Last year, like on many reservations, there was a rash of suicides on Standing Rock in the spring. They came in waves, spasms almost. It was terrifying for the whole community. So when we arrived, many around the res, the elders especially, were anxious about another attempt. And sadly, towards the end of our time in Wakpala, a young woman visiting from the Pine Ridge Reservation took her life. And as was the custom, later that day, the elders gathered at the home where the suicide took place for a comfort service. In the Lakota Episcopal tradition, there are three services after a death. The comfort service at the home soon after, the wake the night before the funeral, often all night, and the funeral followed by burial. Soon after we heard about this suicide, another priest from the Bay Area on the trip and I were asked to participate in the comfort service. I don't know that I have been more apprehensive in my life. To enter the home of someone who has lost a loved one, especially to suicide, is devastating. And to offer words of comfort in a culture so different than my own was daunting. My words were, at best, imperfect. But it was after the service had ended and we began to leave the home that I realized that, yes, words are important, they carry meaning, but that was not why we were there that day. It was our presence that provided the comfort. Our simple, faithful act of presence. This passage we heard this morning from Matthew forms one of the core teachings of the Stephen Ministry program that we engage in here at All Souls Parish. Often it is tempting to enter a pastoral situation ready to fix whatever comes our way. Recognizing that grand gesture often isn't what is called for, Stephen ministers are trained that small acts offered faithfully over time make monumental difference. Instead of arriving with the cape of a superhero, ready to leap tall problems in a single bound, our Stephen ministers are trained to enter someone's life with a listening ear, an attentive presence to the lonely battles being fought day after day. They aren't there to tell the other person how it's done or what they've done themselves. They're there to listen, to offer a cold cup of water to someone who is parched with thirst. They are called to simple, faithful acts of presence. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. This saying, attributed to Philo of Alexandria, is a necessary reminder as we encounter those we meet in the break room at work, in grocery aisles, maybe even in congressional chambers. For some of life's battles are seen above the surface of the water, right? The loss etched into the face of someone who has freshly lost a job. The missing eyebrows from the fight with chemotherapy. But often the battles of life are only witnessed underneath the water. It is here that we come full force against the icebergs of pain and sorrow, of fear and frustration. This is where we run aground. For this is where these pains lurk in the darkness, so rarely seen. Now, in this sermon, I've used some dramatic examples to offer a few glimpses of what a cup of water might be like for a little one. In the next week, you may indeed, especially youth heading to South Dakota, you may indeed encounter a situation where the finality and the frailty of life is that painfully clear. But if we take the phrase little one to mean someone who is vulnerable, in need of refuge, someone seeking shelter, in need of solace, My friends, this week it will be difficult to avoid this encounter. For we are surrounded by friends and family, strangers and acquaintances, thirsty for the water we bear with us through Christ's attentive presence in this world. And even though it may seem hopeless to confront what is larger or stronger, even though our instinct is to feel helpless or powerless, unable to surmount what we face, friends, we must remember that even the smallest acts of mercy affect great change. We are not always called to the grand heroic action, the sweeping act of courage that makes the silver screen. But that does not mean that we cannot have effect in this world. No matter where you find yourself this week, in the corridors of power, or on the sidewalks of Telegraph Avenue, do this, friends. Offer yourself. Through a letter, a phone call, a visit, the sharing of a smile, a gesture of thanks, find some way. This week, friends, pray for peace. Pray for an end to war. Pray for reconciliation. Pray for justice. Pray for righteousness. And begin with a cold cup of water, a simple, faithful act of presence.